of sports in the North Shore, and you know they're in contact with the kids. You can almost say a daily basis, and they become almost part of an extended family. And they bring it to light every time they get together with Bill, and they start talking about it. You know, with the names and the dates, and like it's, you know, and they step back in time and do the same thing.
Yeah, and they it's a weekly thing, and they're always positive, always talking about the positive stuff. They will do critique when they feel it's due. And it's just great to hear these guys do it. We appreciate their being on the program. And then, of course, at the end of the week, on Thursdays, Dominic DeCastro has his Sports Desk programs, and those are equally entertaining as he goes a little bit farther north in the Merrimack Valley with the Merrimack Valley Sports Desk. But on the North Shore Sports Desk, it's more of the same, and he has in-depth interviews with coaches and kids. And what I do like, Tim, as opposed to national and Boston radio, is that these guys, they're in the community, as you said, they're almost family, and they know the families, they know the legacies, and it really makes, I keep saying this, but it builds the entire North Shore into a backyard coffee table when you talk sports.
Oh, it's like, you know, picking up an encyclopedia with these guys. Again, I think one of the things that serves this area so well is the tenure that these guys have accumulated in covering North Shore sports. It's not like that, you know, and it's not to criticize any guys that have come and gone relatively short time. But, you know, these guys have been here, and they've grown up with the kids. You know, much like I'm going to be talking to Steve Krause soon, and his former colleague Matt Roy. They grew up with these kids in Lynn, the kids playing football and basketball and hockey. And when you listen to them talk about them, they come up with little nuggets of information about them and their families and their siblings who played before them and where they went to school and the statistics. Matt used to amaze me when we would do baseball games years back, and he would, you know, just come up with these little stories about these kids when they were playing Little League, and he was following them all around in the state tournaments and in the regional tournaments. And it really adds to the broadcast. It really adds to your writing when you can inject those kind of stories into what you're presenting.
And speaking of the tournament, we have three football teams still left in the tournament in the area, and a couple of other teams in other sports as well. St. John's Prep plays against Andover this weekend. The Prep still number one, 10-0, and that, of course, is in Division One. In Division Five, Danvers plays on, and they're the only school in Division Five outside the top four in the power rankings, and so they play on. The interesting one is in D6, Salem is number three, so you know they're advancing to the semis. But number 15, Stoneham is the lowest seed, I think, in any of the brackets still surviving. So it'll be a good test for Salem, of course, and the other schools in D6. Also, an eighth seed is still playing, along with the number four seed. And then finally, Amesbury will be playing. As they will be playing Cohasset in Division 7. These are all Friday games, of course, and Amesbury is rated number 6. Burlington is the site of that game. Then, in D4 volleyball, Ipswich plays Hudson. In D2 soccer, Masconomet, number 1 rated in D1, will be playing, Notre Dame of Hingham. And Linfield, the girls' soccer, will be playing against South Hadley. And then the final team we have still surviving is Linfield Boys Soccer, as they'll be playing number 3, Hampshire Regional, and Linfield is number 2. Now, you notice, Tim, I didn't ask you anything, nor am I going to ask you anything about the dead horse that's down in Foxborough, because I think everybody else has taken care of that. But I do think that I've been reading a lot about well, who's the new GM for the Red Sox?
Oh,
yeah, you too. I could see. Yeah, my God, this is awful. And I've
he used to pitch for him.
Yeah, I know. Okay, okay, this is terrible. who's going to come up with it first? Who's going to come up with it first? Oh, God.
Mike Will.
What is it?
Hang on.
Yeah. Oh, we bring it up like that. And
Craig Breslow.
I just thought of it. Craig Breslow, yeah. And it's weird. I read a story by Christopher Gasper the other day about, you know, the Red Sox needed a man with experience, and they didn't get one. But that's the only negative story I've read. What do you think about what you've read and heard about Breslow?
Well, everything that I've read about him is really positive. He's an extremely intelligent young guy. He's paid his dues working his way up through the management level after his playing career was over. You have to give him a chance to see. You know, when we had Theo Epstein, you know, he was young, and you know, I think he was even younger, and he came through and put some magic in the program, so to speak. And I think we're going to have at least he's a baseball person, Rick. Who the heck was Chaim Bloom?
Yeah.
You know, I think everybody who heard the name went, you know, where did this kid come from? And his tenure was short. It was not sweet. Probably a very capable guy, but it didn't work out here according to what he wanted to do. And Breslow is going to have a little bit of a honeymoon as a former player here with the Sox. He's got a great educational background. So we're going to have to wait and see. Give him a little slack. See what his first moves are. His first moves will be very indicative of the road he wants to travel with the Sox. And you know, he's 43. Theo was a lot younger.
Yeah, and it seems to me that it all boils down to how much money ownership's going to spend. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, and you know. John Henry has lots of money, and he's making it both here with the Sox and with Liverpool, you know. So, and I know they'd like them to spend a little bit more money over there as well. But, you know, unfortunately, it comes down to, in terms of both enterprises, he's a businessman. He's looking to make money. He's not looking to lose money. And everything that drives him is a business model. And it's not so much from a fan standpoint as the old owners used to be. So they're looking at bottom lines. You know, and they're looking at analytics. You know, and they don't always pan out. They don't always proved to be right, but they tend to stick with him. And we'll see if he's going to open up the checkbook for Breslow so that he can go out and I mean, there are so many needs, Rick. Look at what the Red Sox need. They need pitching all the way through. They need defensive ball players. They had some pretty offensive ball players this past season.
Yeah, they got four. They got four DHs.
Offensively and defensively, there's talk of Justin Turner walking, you know, because he didn't exercise the option. So it's, you know, they're a team that's in the middle of a stream that's heading towards the rapids with no oars.
Well,
and not even anybody in the canoe.
They do have a couple of young good players like. Casas is in the running for Rookie of the Year, believe it or not.
Devers. Red Sox, great tradition of trading those guys.
Oh, yeah. Devers won a Silver Slugger Award for third base. So, you know, there is some excitement there for that. But that's it. So it was interesting also to hear Breslow say, we need a pitcher, a starting pitcher or two. So, you know, hopefully they'll give him the checkbook. We'll see. Who knows? But that's a positive hope. Certainly the Bruins are doing great. They're off to a terrific start, as are the Celtics. Both are entertaining to watch. We're going to talk with Steve Krause in just a minute. Steve is going to talk, I hope, a little bit about his experiences as a newspaper reporter covering tournament action, I've got one favorite story that I would like to mention if we get a chance. Also going to talk a little bit about sports pet peeves, and then later on, Mike Grenier is going to come by and talk some basketball and have his Power 5, his first Power 5 of of the season. And also, if you have a chance, go on Facebook and read Steve's musings today about the Patriots. They're succinct, they're in depth, and I think they're spot on. And that's all I want to say about it. I encourage people to go read it. I don't want to talk about it here because, again, that horse is dead. So let's move on. We're going to take a break. We'll check in with Steve in just a minute. This is North Shore Sports Night on MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore with Tim Kearns. Our producer and engineer is Bill Proposky, and we will most assuredly, hopefully, be back.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
The North Shore is listening to MSONewsSports.com and our great selection of podcasts.
Hi, this is Phil Stacey, Executive Sports Editor at the Salem News. Make sure to listen to our podcast every week with the sports writers from the Salem News, including Matt Williams, Nick Giannino, and myself.
MSO News Sports, connecting you to the North Shore.
We're back now with Steve Krause. We're back with Steve Krause, news reporter and sports reporter and editor and all kinds of good stuff, and a good guy as well. And Steve, I was just mentioning I don't really want to talk about the Patriots because it's a horse that's dead. But I am referring everybody to what you posted on Facebook today because I thought that was spot on, and it was well written with no acid at all. I mean, it just makes sense. So I'm gonna ask you if you could tell people how to access that article.
Well, if you're a friend of mine on Facebook, you just go and look up my name, and it'll be there.
All right. And I.
And if you're not a friend of mine on Facebook, I still think you can go into. I'm not an expert on it, but you can find it on Facebook. Just, if you're not a friend of mine, just look for my name, mm-hmm. and it should be there.
It's well written, as they always are, and it's thought-provoking, and it's detailed. And then we're going to move on from this. But I just, my last question about that, the musings, how do you have a keyboard that you use? Because that's a lot of thumb pushing if you don't.
No, I type that out on my regular laptop.
Oh, okay, all right.
Yeah.
Because that's what I have to.
No, I'd sprain both my thumbs. More, I wouldn't even be halfway through it.
No,
you know, I hate texting anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I got fat fingers, and I keep hitting wrong keys and everything. I prefer doing it on the computer,
right.
But you can't text on the computer, so
right.
So well, much for that.
All right. What I want to do, Steve, I'm asking everybody a little spur of the moment here, besides whatever it is you'd like to talk about tonight, to come up with a pet peeve or two regarding sports. It doesn't have to be specific, but something that, that kind of burns your craw when you're watching or covering a game or just talking sports.
Well, I was going to say my biggest pet peeve used to be how long it took to play a baseball game because the pitchers are out there messing around and playing with the rosin bag and stepping on and off and all that other stuff. But this year was the clock made a big difference, so I'm gonna have to come up with another pet peeve. I would have to say, for me, a pet peeve. My biggest pet peeve in sports is all these guys that have to prance around the bases after they hit a home run, like they invented the term. You know, I come from an era where Mickey Mantle would run with that little hitch in his get-along, as Bob Montgomery used to say. he'd keep his head bowed, and he'd run around the bases, and then he'd go into the dugout, and that would be the end of it. And one time he said that he figures he embarrassed the pitcher enough by hitting the home run. He doesn't need to embarrass him anymore. But, you know, it was dignified.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys probably know it was dignified. You know, when Yaz hit a home run, even when Yaz hit his 400th home run, you didn't see any of that stuff. You just saw Yaz running around the bases, you know, like he'd done it before. And, you know, it just reminds me of that old line that they used to say after you'd score a touchdown. If you ever get to the end zone, act like you've been there before.
Yep.
You know? And I'd have to say that's the biggest pet peeve I have.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is in football, if you make a tackle and you get up and dance around like it's river dance or something like that, again, same concept, you know. It's part of the game. You make a tackle, that's what you're supposed to be doing when you're out there. So why celebrate something that you're supposed to be doing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like every time I write a story, I get up and dance around the news. You know, I guess that would be it. That would be my two biggest pet peeves.
Response, Tim?
Oh, I'm in full agreement with Steve on both of those. Emmitt Smith used to have, you know, the classic response when he scored a touchdown, he ran by the back judge and handed him the football.
Right, and Barry Sanders did that too.
What was that?
Barry Sanders did that too.
Yeah, but, you know, the two of the greatest running backs of all time, they didn't need to show off. Getting into the end zone, again, was what they were paid to do. And you remember those guys doing that because it was such a classy way of conducting themselves. You know, they provided all these magic moments getting down the field. And once they get into the end, it was, okay, here you go, I'm done. You know,
yeah.
And it's like, that's class. You know, and you see these guys, now it's a team gathering in the back of the end zone to primp and prance around in front of the cameras with these stupid dances. You know, they need a Hollywood choreographer.
Yeah,
like, come on, I know it's entertainment, you know, as such, but it's like, God, it's so pathetic. But, you know, in carping about this, this is the age that we were brought up in, that it was, you still did things like you've been there before, with some class. You don't do it to embarrass your opponent. Now it's all about how much attention can I get to myself. It's bigger than a Hollywood production, unfortunately. And
yeah,
that's why hockey's
such a great game. They don't do stuff like that in hockey. The whole team celebrates after a goal. But, you know, goals are kind of harder to come by in hockey. So it's you deserve it. But you don't see it preening around in hockey, you know, because they all know that the minute somebody does that, soon as the action picks up again, they're going to get driven into the boards and knocked into next Tuesday.
You know, guys, I think that this isn't one. It wasn't one of my pet peeves, but I'm going to add it now. The Red Sox flashing those lights after a home run. Did you see that this season?
Yeah, I was at one of those games when somebody did that. I actually thought it was kind of cool.
Did you?
Myself. Yeah. Well, I was there, you know.
Yep, okay.
I never noticed it before.
Okay.
But I was there. I thought the power went out. So somebody had to explain to me that, no, this is their new thing. I'll tell you what bothers me about the Red Sox. One of the worst teams in baseball last year is every time somebody got a hit, he flexed his muscles.
Mm.
Give me a break.
Tim, did we do that in the classroom every time we got an amen?
Yeah, right. Every time I got the right answer in math, I flexed my muscles.
There you go. Well, I want to ask you, Tim, are you still there?
I am. I'm just coughing.
No, I was Tim. Because I was asking Tim.
Yeah, I haven't flown out of the chair.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So I want to ask Steve, if you have a memory that you could share with us about your high school days, high school coverage days, of a tournament game, because as I was thinking about that too, it's funny. Two games immediately popped into my head, and maybe even a third as I talk about it now. And I'm sure you must have a favorite or two that just comes to mind kind of automatically.
Yeah, it's a random thing. The first one was I had actually had a strep throat and didn't know it, and I was at the game, and I was standing in the back row of the opposing side bleachers. And Bishop Fenwick played somebody. And that was the game that Casey Arena. Remember Casey Arena from Fenwick?
No.
Okay. He was in between Brunson and Sean Connolly in Fenwick hierarchy. Oh, Brunson was Salem. What am I talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
In North Shore hierarchy. You know, he was around that time, and Casey Arena put in something like 50 points, and Fenwick won the game. And all I remember is that he took a three, literally, from beyond the half-court stripe, and it went in swish.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy next to me goes, "No way!" And I turned to him and said, "Way."
Way.
And he laughed, and I laughed, and it was. But this kid, he was phenomenal in that game. Phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. Tim, I know you've got one or two. Boston Garden mean anything to you?
What's that again?
I was asking Tim about Boston Garden covering hockey.
Let's see. Our first coverage of Gloucester. Way back when we were way up top, and they only had the lower bowl open, and there were so many Gloucester fans, they filled in every section of the lower bowl except one, and they had to open the second level because there were so many more fans that needed seats. I thought that was just incredible, looking around, that so many people from Gloucester, this little town up on the North Shore, you know, put them on buses and they drove in their cars and they took the train to go and watch their high school's hockey team, that they just they totally dominated Boston Garden. It was incredible. Yeah. The other team had one section of fans.
Gloucester always traveled well. I remember that. You know, when Gloucester would come down to Swampscott or Lynn to play, and there's always a lot of people. Those visiting side stands, those were the days when they had visiting side stands.
Yeah.
Those visiting side stands were always full. And there was this guy from Swampscott who used to Gloucester came down one year in a really crummy day, and Swampscott beat them. And this was back when Gloucester was very good in football, and Swampscott was meh. But for some reason or another, they come to Swampscott, and Swampscott beats them. And this guy comes up to me afterwards, and he says, "See, get them off the island, and they're just normal."
I like that. I hadn't heard that one before. So the island is their superpower, huh?
Yeah, the island. You gotta go up to the island, and they get kryptonite, or they don't. They lose the whatever Superman.
Oh.
Whatever saps Superman's strength. It's kryptonite. That's what he can't have, right?
Right.
They give him kryptonite when he goes to Bloxwich Field in Swampscott.
Wow, that is really cool. Well, you know, and one of my gripes was that kind of thing, only it's in a negative fashion. When I'm if I'm not working a game, it's hard for me to sit in the stands, because what some of the people say, and I know some of them are even parents, it's just awful, you know. And they're not, and some of them are even dissing their own kids. Like, come on, or you know, or you're. There's a parent sitting next to you, and you're dissing that parent's kid. You know, it's high school sports. I just don't like it. I don't understand why people can't be rooting for your team instead of booing someone else or complaining about your guys.
Yeah, that bothers me. I'm really sensitive to that too. I got to agree with you there, Rick. For me, I don't know whether it having been cloistered in press boxes for most of my life. When I really didn't have to listen to them.
Right.
But
yep.
These days, you know, press boxes are getting smaller and smaller, and you have to be outside. And you're right. There's, no matter when you go, there's always some idiot that just loses totally perspective on the thing. Yeah. I think the thing that I hate the most is the obscenities, you know, in the cheers and the chants and stuff like that. And
yep.
I don't know. I remember we went to a girls' basketball game once, and Linfield was playing somebody. And there was a heavy set girl on one of the teams. Not fat, but, you know, not thin either, you know. And she was obviously in the front court. She was the muscle. And, you know, she was pretty good, actually, at coming down with rebounds. I wish I'd have coached her. And every time she passed a certain section of the stands, everybody would go, "Moo."
Oh, geez.
And I got to tell you, I thought that was awful. The poor girl. But, you know, she played well, and she didn't let it bother her, but it bothered me, you know. That is just so unnecessary.
Yeah. I was just
talking about you with the silence?
stupid parents. Oh, my God. I was at, when I was finished coaching, I went to a game in 2005 at Gloucester, and I was standing behind the left field fence, and Frank DeFelice was still coaching. And you know how tough Frank was. Frank is a former Marine.
Yeah.
And this kid was up at the plate, and Frank wanted him to bunt, and the kid didn't do it. And Frank got on the kid a little bit. You know, Frank's old school. The kid's father decided to come out on the field behind Frank's back, yelling. And I'm just thinking, if Frank turns around, they're going to have to get a squad to pick this person up off the ground. You know, and I'm watching and I'm going, oh, this just can't end well. And I'm thinking, you know, does this guy really not know who Frank DeFelice is and what he has been?
Oh, God.
I would have
paid money to see that.
Oh my God! This guy was within 10 feet, Steve, of losing his teeth. Honest to God, because Frank just would have turned around and defended himself. And they managed to get him. They dragged him out. that he had to act, actually had to call the police and put him in his car and force him to drive away. That's how obnoxious this parent was.
Mm.
Because his little boy got yelled at because he didn't do what the coach wanted him to do.
Jeez.
Yeah. I was sitting. I know you didn't want to talk about the Patriots game, but I was watching yesterday when Bill O'Brien got in Mac Jones's face over that crazy pass he threw that almost got picked off. And I can think of a few times when coaches got in my face for stupid things I did on the field. And I wasn't Mac Jones, believe me. I was about as bad a football player as you could ever come up with. I just enjoyed being out there and being part of the team. I didn't, I never pretended to be any good. And, I tell my dad on the way home, you should have seen what he said to me today. And my father would say, well, did you deserve it? And, but to think about it, and Mr. Bud, every time he said that, I had to say, guess I did, he said, you're not going to get any help from me,
It's a different time, boys. It's a different time.
It was, yeah.
Yep. All right, Steve, we got to go pick up Mike Grenier here. Again, thank you.
My best.
I will, and thanks for the article today. I'm going to share this with as many people as I can. And it was it's just done perfectly. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Rick.
All right.
Thank you, Tim.
All right, Steve. We'll talk to you later.
Well, take care. Bye-bye.
Yep. Bye-bye. All right. That is Steve Krause. Tim Kearns and I are still here, and we're going to talk with Mike Grenier in just a second and maybe throw around a few more pet peeves. But we'll definitely be talking Celtics in particular. And that's where one of my pet peeves is, so I might have to get into that. So we'll be back. See if I can do it a little bit better this time. This is North Shore Sports Night on MSO News Sports, and here we go.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at moynihanlumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we are back with Mike Grenier now, another sports journalist here on the North Shore that we are really lucky to be talking with most weeks. And Mike, I got to tell you, one of us of the three of us took a really bad fall last spring. Another one of us took a really bad fall today. But I'm not going to say which one of us did which because we've each been there.
Yeah, so I know, but I feel bad for either of those victims.
Well. That's why one of us answered as we did, like, November, whatever. Okay, I'm going to start off, gentlemen, and then I want you guys to pick it up, and then we'll turn back over to the Celtics. But one of my pet peeves, it may be even my favorite, certainly Steve brought up and Tim did, stuff that irritate me when watching a pro game especially. But I watched the Celtics, was it yesterday? And the
Saturday night. Yep.
The incessant organ music when the Celtics have the ball was mind-boggling, and it was awful. And I've said this before. I remember back at the Old Garden when the halftime entertainment was two gentlemen pushing mops across the floor in opposite directions.
Right, exactly. Oh, no, that's a good pet peeve, though. Now, what other ones have we heard so far tonight? What has Tim been chit-chiming in so far on this?
Yeah, I'll let Tim pick it up. Yep.
Yes. As long as I'm able to keep myself in the chair.
Oh, boy, yeah. I get you. I understand.
Yeah, fan behavior. We were talking about football players that get in the end zone. Now they have to, they call the whole team over and they run down to the end of the end zone and they dance and get stupid in front of the cameras and stuff. And it's like, nobody cares. We didn't come to see the Rockettes. We came to see football players, you know. And we're talking about back when you had Walter Payton, Barry Sanders, Emmitt Smith. They get into the end zone and they went right to the back judge and gave him the ball.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny, Tim. It's funny you should mention that one, and I completely agree with you, and I'm sure Rick would too. I'm reading actually a book on Johnny Unitas, okay, which is fabulous. And of course, he played for the Colts in the 50s and the 60s and all that. And when there was no, and he was watching a game in the book, he describes how he was watching a game of more recent vintage. And he talks about he was sitting with a sports writer at his house watching a game. And he said, "Have you ever seen so many dances in the end zone?" And this is the great Johnny Unitas, because obviously back in those days, you know, it seems ancient to a lot of people, but the late 50s, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, Walter Payton, those guys didn't dance in the end zone, and they weren't joined by their 10 of their teammates dancing in the end zone. So that's a beautiful one that right there.
What do you have, Mike?
But can you see Johnny Unitas really dancing with those high black top shoes?
Yes. Yeah.
And the crew cut.
Yeah, and Rick, I agree with you about the organ music and all that, and sometimes the ball's in play, and there's still music going on, and it's just horrendous.
Yeah, I thought it was Saturday night. It was as they're in the forecourt with the ball, it's dump 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 dump, and you know, come on, baby, you know, I want to watch the game.
Right, exactly.
Not the crowd, they sang in between, like, the ball being out of play, and then they would just continue to sing while play was going on. They're singing.
Yeah. Well, it's part of the entertainment package that a lot of sports project now, you know, and it's sad that the game itself, which can be a beautiful game, whether it's baseball, football, basketball, hockey, soccer, whatever, it can be a beautiful game, but they have to interject the music and the dancing and the fireworks.
Well, it's for the non-sports fan primarily.
Right.
All right, I've got one more, and then I'm going to turn it over to you, you, Mike, you and Tim. One more, and it's sideline reporters. I don't care what the sport is. And talking to coaches in baseball or managers in baseball during an inning, and I can't stand any of that.
Oh, that's truly a great one, because how invasive is that? Because the coach is obviously sometimes trying to strategize between quarters, and they're talking to him. And even in the World Series, the postseason, you're seeing the managers get introduced or talked to in the dugout while the ball's in play, and it's absolutely over the top, absurd. And I guess they're probably obligated to do it, right, Tim and Rick, because of contractual items, you know, that, whether it's the Fox Network or NBC, CBS, whatever network you want to name, it's probably in the contract that these guys have to talk during the game.
Yeah, and I hate it. And, you know, it crosses all the sports now. You know, they get the guy on the down at ice level, and he's crawling into the team bench to talk to the coach. It's like, you know, can these guys at least coach? Talk to them in between periods, in between the innings. But Jesus, during the game itself, let them do their job. None of these guys can't hold the job.
Right, exactly. So yeah, we're on the same page here with several of these already. Now, what did our friend Steve Krause do? I don't want to duplicate it. He must have had a couple of good ones.
First of all, he said to say hello to you, and secondly, it was pretty much what Tim was saying, and that he talked about the guys dancing around the bases for home runs is what he was saying. And he brought up He brought up Mickey Mantle, where Mantle would hit a home run and just do his business around the bases and get in the dugout.
Oh yes, almost any player we saw. Sometimes a lot of players would have their heads down, right, and just run around the bases as quickly as possible and get back in the dugout because they didn't want to embarrass the pitcher, and there wasn't none of this throwing the bat up in the air for 40, 50 feet. And watching your home run go out in the park before you even start running. Horrific stuff. So that's a great one by Steve Krause.
I always enjoy when a guy crushes one, thinks it's going out, stands there and watches it, and then it comes off the wall.
I love that. I love that. You know, I love that. You want me to chip in one?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, please do.
I'll start with this one. Bill O'Brien, the alleged offensive coordinator of the Patriots, screaming at the top of his lungs at Tom Brady several years ago, the greatest quarterback, one of the smartest athletes of all time, screaming at Brady, and then admittedly, you know, Mac Jones is not in that class, but for him to get screamed at when the game is on the line and it's a close game in Germany and you have a lot of spectators there and you have a big TV audience, and then yelling at him like, you know, like he'd injured a family member or something like that. And then Mac Jones, to his credit, he just held on to the tablet and he motioned for Bill O'Brien, let's look at this together. Okay, I made a mistake, but it's you know, the game is still on the line here. It's a 3 or 4 point game, and you're screaming at me, and I'm studying the tablet to see what I did wrong. So that's sort of a hot pet peeve because it happened yesterday.
Yep.
And Tim, Rick, what do you guys think of that one?
Well, you know, he had to lose it at some point, Mike. You know, yep. He sat and he's watched his kid regress, I think we'd all have to agree, during the course of this season. He's not making fewer mistakes, he's making more mistakes. He's not making different mistakes, he's making the same mistake.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, you know, we go through this, we talk about it, we game plan it. You know, we practice doing these things correct. And yet, in a game situation, you do the exact same stupid thing. I mean, he had 5 sacks in the first half of yesterday's game. Once he ran into his own offensive lineman and basically knocked himself down. You know, and I'm like, he has no flexibility. We think Brady couldn't move. Brady was a prima ballerina in the pocket, knowing when to move up, when to slide left, when to slide right.
Right,
he has no clue with this stuff, and it hinders a bad situation because the offensive line is trying to hold off as best it can, and we know that they're under duress most of the time, and you get a guy who can't get out of his own shadow.
It's got to be
frustrating for them that as much as they're trying to hold up, he can't slide to an open spot. He doesn't know how to get up into that vacant spot and get rid of the ball. He's still holding the ball down around his groin area, looking for a place to hide.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, but I'll maintain that the offensive line the Patriots have is perhaps the worst in the entire league, and Mac Jones panics because he doesn't know he knows he doesn't have much time at all.
All right, I'm going to interject here, Mike.
Go ahead, Rick.
I started the program by saying it's a horse that's dead. It's been beaten by everybody else. I want us to stay positive because I know you've got a lot of good things to talk about tonight.
Yeah, sure. Well, that's my first pet peeve, okay?
Yep.
Let's go to my second one.
Yep.
I want to hear some feedback on this one. A week ago today, LeBron James speaking to the media, pronounces his son, Bronny, who had cardiac arrest a couple of months ago, pronounces him ready for the USC basketball season. He's a freshman at Southern Cal. And he's going on and on about how he's in class and he's working out and he's going to be ready for the basketball season and he's 100% ready to go and all that stuff. And yet, all the basketball officials and everybody in the athletic administration at USC is not saying a word about Bronny James being ready physically. And I'm thinking, is LeBron James a world-famous cardiologist at Mass General? Because as a father, he wants his son to play. But he has no business, in my opinion, of pronouncing his son healthy when people at USC could be held liable if something goes wrong with this kid, if he ends up playing too early. So that's a real pet peeve on my part, is LeBron James adopting the role of cardiologist and spokesperson when he really has no idea what's going on. I mean, in terms of we saw what happened to Reggie Lewis. You know, he wanted to find the perfect doctor to declare him healthy, and as soon as he found that doctor, Reggie Lewis collapses and dies. So What is LeBron wanting to get out of this here? I mean, you want USC and their doctors and all of their officials to say, okay, Bronny James is a freshman. He'll be ready to play in January or February. They're not making any pronouncements or any announcements as to when or if he'll be able to play basketball, Bronny James. But LeBron is going right ahead, full steam ahead, and saying, my kid is ready. So that offended me just as a sports fan, because this kid could collapse again and die on the court.
Yeah, you know, that's ego overtaking his sensibilities, unfortunately.
Uh-huh, yep.
You know, and it just makes you wonder, you know. I was stunned to hear that, Mike. I'm still stunned. You know, that a father would put his son out in the floodlights, going, okay, listen, you're good to go, so don't hold back, make me look good, you know, and he will pay the ultimate bad price if it comes down where he, you know, has a very bad injury or a bad repetition of the heart thing. Yeah, it's crazy. You know, he should be out there saying, my son will not play until he's been cleared by several doctors, not
correct.
Just the U.S. doctors, but an outside source.
That was my thought, too. That was my thought, too, Tim. Rick, what do you think of that one?
The same thing. I was before you even got to it, I was just thinking, has he ever heard of Reggie Lewis?
Right, and also, too, ironically, guys, a year ago, I don't remember the player, USC had another kid who had cardiac arrest in the summertime, and he came back and played, but the USC did not let him play until, like, January, toward the latter part of the season, and he only averaged 4 or 5 points a game because he played a very limited role, because USC was still obviously concerned, even though he had been cleared by the doctor, USC was concerned about putting him out on the court for extended minutes in case this happened again, because obviously the liability would be enormous, and it would look so bad if the kid died on the court and the USC didn't do their due diligence in terms of the doctor's clearance. So I think for LeBron to say that a year after another USC player had cardiac arrest and barely played last season, I just thought he was way out of line and way, way too premature in making those kinds of statements. So that's a pet peeve about a big name, man, LeBron James.
Yeah, you know, you can go back a little bit further, and you got Hank Gathers.
Yes, correct. Mm-hmm. But Reggie Lewis, like you said, Rick, a prime example of something where a lot of doctors said he should never play again, and mm-hmm. Remember, Rick, it was called the super team of doctors, the super team, and he finally found Dr. Mudge say, no, he's going to be okay, you know, he can play, and that's exactly what Reggie wanted to hear, unfortunately, and he paid the ultimate price.
All right, we got to go to your Power Five in a minute, Mike. But
sure,
an update on Robert Williams III I saw today was really discouraging.
Oh, for the season, right?
Yeah, I don't know that it had been finalized, but it was trending that way.
Yeah, and I pretty much the stuff I read over the weekend, it looked like he's going to be out for the season. Certainly, it's really, I don't want to call it tragic, but it's like, for his career, obviously, it derails his career for a long period of time again. And the Celtics, I guess, were, quote, fortunate in the sense that they were able to move him before this happened when he was a member of the Celtics. So, or it might not have happened. It obviously, it's a freak injury and all that happened during a game with Portland. So we don't know if it would happen with the Celtics. But obviously, he's been prone to injury over the years. He hasn't been able to escape that stigma. And he hasn't been able to escape the injuries at all. And, you know, you feel bad for the guy primarily because he has obvious enthusiasm for the game. And he plays it well when he's in there. But he just can't keep him on the court.
Yeah.
It's just an unbelievable thing, you know?
Yeah, you know, Mike, as soon as I saw the news about his injury, my first thought was the conversation that we had even before that he was being moved, about you just can't rely on him because he's not going to give you a whole season. He's going to give you limited minutes every single game because you just don't know how long he's going to last. And I'm thinking, well, that was a rather prophetic conversation that we had.
Yep. Oh no, I agree. It's just too bad. Portland's on the hook, you know, for money, a good contract that he has, and you know they were relying on him probably to be a big man who could rebound and score a little bit, and because they're not a really contending team, the Portland Trailblazers. And now they lose this big guy for the balance of the season. You know, there's 72 games to go, 74 games to go. So it's Robert Williams. Who knows what's going to happen to him a year from now when he's supposedly right. Healthy again. We'll see, you know.
All right, let's get to your Power Five, the first one of the season.
Absolutely. And I've studied this one. So it's funny, I saw an actual NBA Power Five. They have an official thing. I came across it a day or so ago, but I said, I don't quite agree. My Power Five is different. I go by what you call the eye test as opposed to the analytics.
Okay, yes.
I've seen a lot of these teams,
uh-huh.
Right?
Yep.
So my number five team, as much as we don't like them, and I say we, meaning I don't think you guys like them either, I got to go with the Dallas Mavericks at the number five spot. They're 8-2, and you know, Luka Doncic's obviously having another big year scoring, and he rebounds, and he has a lot of assists, and you know, and Kyrie is their secondary guy, and he contributes. But they're off to a great start, 8-2, so you can't deny them that spot because we don't personally like them, right? So they're my number five team right now. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go a surprising team to a lot of people, but I think they're legit, and that is the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They're number four for me because they're 7-2. They beat the Celtics at home in Minnesota, dealt the Celtics their first loss a week or so ago. Anthony Edwards was already a good player, but he's come to really to the kind of the cream at the crop right now among players. He's one of the top players, and they have two big players who can rebound, and Karl Anthony Towns, who's also an excellent scorer. And you know, they're playing great ball. I mean, it's 7-2, and they're beating good teams. So they're my number four team. I got to go with the Denver Nuggets, the reigning champions, the defending champions. I got to go with them at the number. They were my number one a couple days ago, but they lost to Ime Udoka's Rockets last night, I believe it was. And Ime Udoka, he's got to be a very good coach, Rick, because there's not much talent on that Houston team, and they've won six in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And they're 6-3, and they beat Denver, sure, by just 3 points last night. But Denver's been playing great overall, but they rank at number three, okay? And I noticed my Jokic, still my favorite to win the MVP even this season. Last night he had like 35 points and 21 rebounds. In today's NBA, you don't get 21 rebounds, you know? And he's just he's such an old-school player. You love the way he plays, and right now they're playing without their second-best player, Jamal Murray, who has a hamstring issue. So maybe that's why they lost last night. He might not be back for a few weeks, but they're still an outstanding team. And right now, my number three. I have to go with our Boston Celtics at the number two spot, 7-2 and playing great. And they also, I think, have the best point differential. When they win, they dominate teams better than any other team in the NBA. In other words, they've been winning by an average of 13 or 14 points a game. That's the best ratio in the entire NBA, okay? And number one, Rick, a city that you're certainly familiar with, Philadelphia.
I was waiting for that, yep.
76ers, my goodness. They get rid of James Harden, and I'm sure some people felt, oh, you're getting rid of one of these great all-time players. It's probably the best thing that ever happened to them because the Clippers, who acquired Harden, have yet to win a game since James Harden got there. And Embiid, of course, is having a big year. And Tyrese Maxey, who was very good last year, looks like a much improved player. And he's clearly the number two star on that team. He scored 50 points last night.
Wow. Right?
And I think the reason I have to list him ahead of the Celtics, well, not only do they have a better record at 8-1, but they beat the Celtics head-to-head. So at least early in the season here, they're my number one in the Power Five. And it'll be interesting, Rick, because the Celtics and the 76ers renew that rivalry on Wednesday night, I believe, in Philadelphia. They'll be playing for about the 900th time since the days of Bill Russell and Wilt Chamberlain and Chet Walker and that whole group in the 1950s. So I think the Eastern Conference is setting up for a nice race here with Philly, Boston, and Miami was playing well until Tyler Hero got hurt again a couple of games ago, and he's got a high ankle sprain. He'll be out for a few weeks, so their record has dipped to 6-4, and I think if I had to list as a disappointing team right now, it's the Milwaukee Bucks, who I think will be there at the end, but right now they're only 5-4, and they're struggling with the new coach, Adrian Griffin, and they haven't played the kind of basketball that I expected anyway, and I think a lot of people expected them to be better than they have been.
Mm-hmm. Tim?
You know, Mike, as far as the 76ers go, you take the anchor off from around the neck,
yeah,
and all the talent's allowed to float to the top and express itself.
Yeah.
Listen to the poet. All right, Tim.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Like, yes.
I said listen to the poet. That's excellent.
I tell you, that's why I've been so quiet. I've been dreaming this one up.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, guys that should have been getting the ball are now getting the ball. Guys that have talent are just standing around or sitting on the bench. They're out there in the flow, in the offense, playing the defense. And you don't need James Harden. You don't need the points he's going to give you because he takes all those points away from everybody else. He upsets the balance of the scoring of the team more than anything else.
That's right. And he wants all the credit when they win. And, you know, he didn't even like, at least I'm sure, I bet you privately if you could talk to Embiid, he would say, I'm so glad to get rid of this guy because Maxey's a much better player anyway. And it's like Maxey's been released from jail, Tim. He was a good player last year, and now he's in the forefront of the lineup with Embiid, and he's scoring 25, 30, 35 a night, and he's very fast. He's got a great shot. The Celtics had a heck of a time defensively against him the first time around. And you also have complimentary players like Tobias Harris and others who can really play the game. They're veteran players, and they play that perfect complimentary role behind Embiid and Maxey, and that's why they're 8-1 right now. So if I'm in Philadelphia right now, obviously the fans out there are loving what the Eagles are doing in football, in the NFL, and they have to be loving what the 76ers are doing here early in the season. I don't think it's a freaky thing either. I don't think it's a fluke. I think the 76ers are going to be there all year, hanging around that number one spot or the number two spot or the number three spot, and they'll be a tough out in the playoffs.
Oh, no doubt about that. It just kills me to have to say Philadelphia.
Right.
It just hurts.
Yeah, it is. It's fun. It's fun to hate those guys. They're
right. It is.
It is. And you know, it's such a historically the bond between Boston and Philadelphia is just so strong. And let's hope the Constitution holds so that we can still talk about that that bond. But yeah, the Sixers are looking great. I don't have any quarrel. I'm not sure I would put the Celtics at number two. I might have dropped them down a little bit, Mike.
Really? Okay. Yeah, but I went with the fact that. You know, they're outscoring their opponents by a lot in all their wins.
Yep.
And, you know, we saw that game where they scored 155 points against the Indiana Pacers. They won in a big fashion against Toronto Raptors on Saturday. They're at home again tonight playing the Knicks and have a chance to build on that record. So, you know, I can see them at that spot. Like I said, Denver, I think, is... There's not much to pick between Denver and the Boston Celtics. I think they're kind of equal. I'm kind of glad that the Golden State Warriors have taken a couple of hits, and they're like a 500 team right now. And another team, I mentioned the Milwaukee Bucks being disappointing, but Tim, the Phoenix Suns were supposed to be a great team, and they have a losing record right now with Durant, and they have Bradley Beal, and they have Devin Booker, who's missed a couple of games with injuries, but they're supposed to be one of those, quote, super teams, and they haven't shown it so far either. So they're nowhere near in the picture. They're nowhere near the picture of being a top team right now.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. Durant to me sort of falls into the same category in a way as Harden. You know, it's all about him. It's give me the ball, get out of my way. Let me go to the hoop. You know, and everybody else tends to stand around and not get involved. And why were the Celtic teams of the old so good? Well, you had Bill Russell back there, but everybody was involved in the play.
Right, right, right. And, Rick, I know we mentioned the Celtics bench a couple of times, and I was a little nervous about them in the first couple of games with Peyton Pritchard was playing extremely poorly and Sam Hauser was not hitting any shots, but I know the last three or four games, Sam Hauser shooting like 57% on threes, which is ridiculous.
Yep.
And, of course, Pritchard has improved the last couple of games, so I have some hope for the bench. And because especially, obviously, when Derek White starts, Horford also comes off the bench, so you have veteran presence there. But that's still the shakiest part of the Celtics team. Is that I'm not sure if the bench can hold up for 82 games plus the playoffs, although I know every coach shortens the bench, and Missoula will do that come playoff time. But if the Celtics have a regular season injury where Jason Tatum misses 20 games or Jaylen Brown or Drew Holiday, you have to hope that the bench can somehow keep it stable.
I'm expecting, I don't know why, but I'm expecting Stevens to pull an Auerbach. He's gonna come up with some seasoned veteran midway through this season somehow.
Yep.
Who's gonna fill that void? Because the other thing is, we love Al Horford, but he doesn't play back to back games.
Right.
And we don't know how the toll is going to be on him, you know, during the entire season.
At age 37.
Yeah. And I'm just feeling that. Let's see. I think Stevens is going to come up with some veteran. That's going to be the answer.
Well, you know, Rick, it's funny you should mention that because I was thinking the same thing today, and there's a guy out there at the Washington Wizards right now who had the ACL injury last year who's now playing again, Danilo Gallinari.
Yep.
And that team's not going to go anywhere, the Washington Wizards. At some point, they may be willing to part with Gallinari, you know, because and get a future draft pick for him.
Mm-hmm.
And Gallinari, even though he's like 34 years old, I watched him play the other night. He had like 12, 14 points. He still hits that step-back jump shot. He can give you, on any given night, you know, anywhere from 10 to 16 or 18 points on a given night. And he's got a veteran type of savvy. He's got veteran savvy. And I think he would be like a nice slot him into that veteran spot you were just talking about, Rick. Unless we're looking for a more athletic guy, because Gallinari doesn't have athleticism anymore. But as a shooter, he'd be a superb shooter for the Celtics as they are presently constituted.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm hoping that Brad Stevens can come up with some move. Maybe at the trade deadline, some team is willing to part with a veteran like you mentioned. I would love to see that because I do believe they need to add at least one more piece of that puzzle on the bench.
Well, maybe there's a P.J. Brown walking down the street.
Exactly. That's the type of guy that we're looking for, Tim, I think, you know?
Well, I know that Brad Stevens listens to this program and takes notes when you guys are on. So let's see what happens.
Yes, exactly. Now, I'm going to be watching, Rick, speaking of Brad Stevens, his son, who played against my nephew, by the way, in AAU basketball, is at Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to see how he might play as a freshman at the University of Notre Dame, a Division I school.
Cool.
We'll see how Brad Stevens' son fares there.
Tim, final thoughts for Mike?
Are we doing a show next week, Rick?
What's next? Next week's not the holiday, is it?
No.
Yeah, I'm planning on it, Mike. Tim, I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know about... hey, listen, you know, 1 week at a time. At my age, brother, it's 1 week at a time.
With me, it's one step at a time.
Yeah, me too. all right, Mike, we're gonna say thank you. Fun once again, and we'll talk again next Monday.
And if we do another pet peeve, I'm going to bring up Aaron Rodgers' name.
Okay, save it for next week.
Because he wants to be a miracle worker and come back.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, my goodness. How bad is that?
Another doctor.
Yeah, okay.
Is he not watching the Jets play every week?
he's on the sidelines.
But anyway, that's a story for another day.
Yeah, okay.
Kelsey could also be a story.
Oh, God, no. Not interested. Not interested.
Yep.
Okay, Mike. Thank you so much. It's always fun, man. Have a great week.
Tim, feel better, please.
Thank you, buddy.
Yep.
All right. Take care, Mike. Good night. All right, that's Mike Grenier, sports journalist, always a blast. And what he said, Tim, you know, take care of yourself, for heaven's sakes.
I'll try.
All right. You know what you need is a – well, never mind. I'm not going to say it. But anyway.
You know, I said, you know, I wish I didn't have the pacemaker, and I wish I still had my hot tub because I'd be in the hot tub.
Well, that's what I was going to recommend. Yeah, something like that. Yeah. All right, Coach, get well quick and, you know, take the ibuprofen.
I'll do that.
All right, Coach. Thanks so much. Talk to you next week. All right, good night, Tim.
That,
All right, that's Tim Kearns, our sports analyst and ambassador of goodwill. Don't forget, we have the sports writers tomorrow. Bill Newell hosting sports writers from the Salem News, and then, of course, the Sports Desk's programs on Thursdays with Dominic Nicastro here on MSO. That'll do it on behalf of Tim and Mike and Steve and our friend Bill Newell, who's working diligently tonight right now in his studio. I'm Rick Moore, and wishing you all a very pleasant good evening. Stay safe, be well, and do the right thing.